I just lost the world war, and the scene slips away to the evenness I fake. It's a shit so world, cause I don't really want you, girl. But you can't be free, cause I'm selfish, I'm obscene. I get a little bit Genghis Khan. I don't want you to get it on with nobody else but me. Ooh, with nobody else but me. I get a little bit Genghis Khan. I don't want you to get it on with nobody else but me. Ooh, with nobody else but me.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO, with news from your community radio station.
Good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo, the weekly news segment featuring news from in and around the KBOO community. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw. Tonight, we have a very special guest, Malcolm Shabazz Hoover. Malcolm, what's up, man?
Yo, peace and love, peace and love.
Yo, so let's see. We were just having a conversation, and you introduced yourself to me when I asked you how to describe you. You said, I'm a writer. I'm a community dude. And then you said something interesting. You said you were a race man.
Yes.
And I wanted to break that down. It's kind of an old school term in my understanding. I don't know if everybody knows. What do you mean when you say race man?
Okay, so when I say I'm a race man, what I mean is that I am somebody, I'm a black man who is explicitly committed to the development and upliftment of African black people. That's what I mean when I say I'm a race man. I'm not sure exactly what time period it came from. I want to say like the 20s, around the times of Garvey. But yeah, I'm a race man. You know, Du Bois was a race man. Garvey was a race man. Malcolm X, the man who gave me my name, was a race man. Dr. King was a race man. We are about the development and uplift of all African people worldwide, and by extension, by all of all oppressed people worldwide.
Man, that's so beautiful, man. I'm glad that you articulated that as sharply as you did, because I was just talking to somebody. We were having a conversation with some of the Alliance students. We were talking about oppression of black bodies and the experience of black bodies, and how when we talk about that in public spaces, oftentimes people want to draw intersections to other people's experiences of oppression. And one of the students said that they were tired of that, and they wanted black experience to be honored as such in those conversations, and not to always have to make room for other people's experience. And my response to her was like, yes, I really understand what you're saying, and I also want to name that the oppression of black people historically is so central
mm-hmm.
to the oppression of all people who experience oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, so what happens to Black folks historically is also going to be happening to First Nations, Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. What happens to Black folks historically makes room and reinforces what is happening in theaters of war in Iraq and Yemen and Palestine and Afghanistan. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, fam. I mean, it's a cold piece. So I've been blessed to be able to travel a little bit. So I've been to Palestine. I've been to Israel.
Uh-huh.
I've been to West Africa. I've been all around the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see is that anti-blackness is the key to, like, unlocking the inner oppressor. You know, America cut its teeth on racism. South Africa, the government of South Africa, when they were designing apartheid South Africa, they looked at the experiences of not just Nazi Germany, but also what did the Southern slaveholders do to oppress their blacks. And this is in their documentation. You know, the way that anti-blackness is enacted is a very specific kind of mentality, but it is a bridge and like a gateway drug to oppression all around. And so if you can manage to look at, if you dissect social oppression, you look at the way the people of color, the dark skin, the original people, the Maori people are treated in New Zealand, then you can see how, let me just break it down. How easy it becomes for then a white man to come from another country to his little crazy screed that he wrote, and then to kill all these people in New Zealand, because New Zealand, in its foundation, as well as America and any other white colonial settler states, are fundamentally racist.
Mm.
It's a fundamentally racist state because they stole the land from some brown people, you know, not in New Zealand, but here in America and the other European colonial states in North America. They brought Africans in to be slaves. They devalued not only our humanity, but the humanity of the indigenous people they stole the land from.
Right. Man, I'm glad you brought up the New Zealand thing, too, because let me tell you, man, I was hired to teach an art and activism residency at arts high school and was fired after halfway into my residency. It was only a two-day residency. I was fired because I showed a film that was archival footage of a Nazi rally held in 1930 in Madison Square Garden in New York City, attended by 20,000 people. One of my students got upset and went to the principal and complained, and then the principal emailed me that night and said, don't come back the next day because the content that I was sharing with the students in the class was too upsetting. And I was tripping on it because, A, my immediate reaction was to get frustrated because I said, now, if I was hired to teach art and activism to high school kids, in the climate in which 50 people just got shot by a white nationalist, and the Prime Minister of New Zealand said herself that she believes that white nationalism is a global problem.
It is.
In this environment, in climate crisis, mass shootings, police terror, economic crisis, I mean,
nah, fam.
How are you going to tell somebody that reality doesn't have a place in the classroom?
Fam, okay, I was a school teacher for 8 years.
Right.
I taught English 1 year. Unfortunately, I apologize to my students. Anybody who ever had me for geometry, I'm sorry. I apologize. Mr. Hoover didn't know what the hell he was talking about. But I do know about history and social science and writing and English and literature. So I got those things down pat. But the thing that killed me is that, you know, my students were so soft. Because they were unaccustomed to people telling them the truth and then demanding that they think. I'm like, you're a human being. My job is not to give you some facts and figures on a piece of paper and ask you to give me those facts and figures back.
Right.
That's not education.
Nah, bro.
My job is to excite your imagination, to give you some tools to solve some problems, and then let's talk about the answers you come up with. That's education.
Think critically.
Yeah.
Problem solve.
Yes. To be able to analyze, innovate, take in the facts. Yes. That's what a real scholar does.
Right.
And I don't care about an A, I care about your brain growing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're unaccustomed to educators really coming in and wanting to do their jobs and using relevant material. And racists don't like to hear the truth about themselves.
So you heard it from Mr. Hoover, Mr. Shabazz Hoover. I didn't say the kid was racist. I didn't say the principal was racist.
The whole system is racist.
And my man just let you know And I do happen to agree with them. Racists do not like to hear about themselves. There was a meme floating around that said, what's the worst thing you could call a white person? Racist.
That's right. Racist. You racist? No, I'm not a racist. I'm not.
Oh, man. So one of the reasons that we bumped into each other at an event recently, we always bump into each other because Portland is a small town, right?
There's only 6 black people here. Five of them is cousins.
Someone's going to get mad at you for saying that.
I mean, there are. Shout out to the black community in Portland. I love y'all. Thank you for help welcoming me in. I appreciate you.
One of the reasons I invited you on News from the Boo was because you're a KBOO volunteer, right?
Well, I'm working on it, yes. So I guess technically I am. Yes, KBOO volunteer working on it.
You're about to have a show.
Yeah, man. Yes.
So what is it? What is your show going to be about?
And okay.
Let us know what you're going to be focusing on.
It's not just me. It's me and my brother Ed Hill. And then we have some other folks working behind the scenes. So there's like a crew of 6 of us who are working together on doing like a current events cultural education show. It's going to be called The Yam Show, focusing on food justice, black food sovereignty, self-determination, independence, cultural education, reparations, and, just the upliftment and loving on black folks, man. That's what we plan to do.
And just to be the devil's advocate, what do you have to say to people who say, well, you're loving on black people and you're a race man, you're a racist?
Well, the devil don't need no advocates, but anyway.
Yeah, right?
the devil got the criminal justice system, the economic system.
Come on.
The White House.
What? Education, economics, yes. Entertainment, labor, law, politics, yes. Sex, religion, and war.
I would say this.
Okay.
I would say this, is that I'm absolutely not a bigot. I have no hatred in my heart for any human being on the planet.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm African. I'm a black person. I'm African. I'm proud to say it. I'm proud to display it. I love all people. And if you love yourself, then you love me also.
Come on.
And so check us out. Tune in. It's something useful for everybody.
The Yam.
Yeah, The Yam. And we really, really, really want to have a diverse listening audience so we can have a vibrant discussion on air about the things that we all need to talk about. We're going to be talking about current issues. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about the state of race affairs in America. We want to have an honest conversation so we can push this conversation forward. We need to have some hard conversations so we can get America's heart in the right place. Like, that has to happen. And so that has to happen among black people. That has to happen among different types of people. But we have to have the conversation. And I mean to have it on air on cable. I want to have it. And I want to have a good time while we're having it. We ain't got to love each other. But we have to respect each other. And we have to be able to move forward. Because the way America is headed is not the America I went to the military for. It's not the America that I have lived in 49 years of my life. I don't like it. And because I am a good American and I believe in taking charge, I decided to gather some of my people, get on air, and try to make a difference. And that's what's up.
Okay, man. I'm looking forward to hearing the show. I'm loving everything you're saying, bro. Yeah. And in addition to that, you talked specifically about food sovereignty.
Yes.
Okay, so food sovereignty is important for many different reasons, and I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about that and tell me a little bit about why it's important. But one of the things that I think about when I think about food sovereignty and actually doing the work of planning food mm-hmm. and creating nourishment, as I think that there's a degree of taking your life and the lives of those who love you into your own hands, seizing at least your material destiny in a certain sense, versus this other kind of awareness that can look pretty bleak. That mm-hmm. can look pretty hopeless.
Yeah.
That if we look at climate science and pay attention to what's happening globally, we can feel like, well, is there even going to be any time left to save ourselves?
Humanity is going to make it. All the human beings aren't going to go.
Okay.
And the more, I believe in self-determination. So land is power.
Right.
Even if it's just a little plot of land that your house sits on or your apartment sits on. But being able to put your hands in the dirt, plant a seed, grow a thing, and then eat from that thing and feed other people from that thing is powerful. It's powerful. Many of our people, many poor people, many of our people, whether they're poor in mind or pocketbook or whatever, heart, don't understand what it is to have power over your own circumstances. Mm. Growing your own food gives you immediate power over your own circumstances. So even if you just know what it's like to grow a tomato plant, you know what it's like to put a thing in the ground, watch that thing grow, reap the fruits of that thing, and so on and so on. That is a metaphor for life.
Okay.
Food sovereignty, having to have control over your own food systems. I know now that I can go get collard greens because I grow them in my front yard.
Right.
I know I can go get the kind of tomatoes I want because I'm growing them right now.
That's real.
I don't have to worry about combing the town for the things that I want to eat because I will be producing them myself.
Mm.
So that right there gives me a control over something that is fundamental to my happiness and my health.
Mm.
Like, I want to eat what I want to eat. I want to eat the foods that make me feel comfortable and healthy.
Come on.
Right? I produce those things for myself. We produce those things for ourselves through Mudbone Grown, the Black Food Sovereignty Council, through the We Grow Garden Initiative, We Grow PDX. And it's something for Black people who are incredibly disempowered to be able to put food in the ground. And we're an agricultural people. Most of us are just one or two generations away from the farm.
Come on.
You know?
Yeah.
And how we've made this huge shift during the Great Migration and now we've become a mostly urban people, we have to get back to not just our roots here in the South, but our roots back at home in Africa or wherever your people came here from, which is, if you are an indigenous person, your roots are in the earth with growing things and producing things. We have to get back to that and stop looking to other people to produce things for us and create them for us. The more we create for ourselves, the more powerful, self-determined, happy, and healthy we become.
Man, that's science that is well stated in clear, simple terms. And that's so important in this time because I feel like a lot of people get split into genres and categories based on where the dominant narrative that's controlled by the dominant class wants to put us. So we hear terms like right and left, right? And so we assume that people who are talking about things that are of a progressive nature, a revolutionary nature, a radical nature, would be on the left. But the fact of the matter is, man, you're just talking about human rights, sovereignty and self-determination, and the right for any human being to have sovereignty and self-determination, essential to their being and their existence, right? You know, you talked about the relationship we have with power and land and being able to make the choice to nourish ourselves, right? And the rush to separate us in recent history from the land. And you know, that's a process of gentrification that's actually global. I see that happening in Africa as well. This rush to the urban center and foreign interests in a colonial, you know, push, buying the same way they offer poor people in the hood cash for a house, get them off that land, man. You know, people being offered cash for to get off the land so that they can go to the city, buy a motor or participate in the economy, the urban economy. And they're never going to get that land back.
Ever.
Ever.
Unless they seize it back.
Right.
So shout out to South Africa.
Yeah. Shout out to Zimbabwe.
Shout out to Zimbabwe.
You know, people don't understand. People go, oh, Mugabe. And it's like, look, man, this isn't about Mugabe. Okay?
It's about justice.
It's about justice. And those politicians might be doing something because there are social movements that have been in existence for generations, ever since the colonials set foot on that soil.
That's our land.
In a genocidal war to disempower and disenfranchise all indigenous people over there. You feel me? So, like, you can't leave that out of the equation. People want to act as if things, current events are happening in a vacuum that aren't connected to history.
Fam, look, I love it. I grew up in a Black Panther household. And so, you know, I'm very blessed that growing up, I got to know people like Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, Dick Gregory, Angela Davis. These were the people who were my family's friends. And so, you know, I'm very, very, very blessed. I didn't understand it then. I thought it was normal to have Alex Haley read you bedtime stories, but not.
Wow.
You know, and I'm lucky. I'm lucky, right? I know that this isn't the typical Black experience, but I'm going to use what I know for the people. And so what I'm telling you is land is power, Africa for Africans, That's our land at home and abroad. So the Africans abroad, those of us who are in the diaspora, Africa belongs to us as well.
Okay.
And for us to allow these white people to continue to pillage, rape, and rob Africa is irresponsible of us as sons and daughters of Africa. And so for Africans who are living at home and who have land at home, you should learn from the Native American who was displaced and robbed of his land all the way from Canada to Brazil. You should see what happened.
Down to Chile, Argentina,
yes,
all the
everything.
Way down.
All of us, wherever the European encounters anybody, even the other Europeans, they have the same pattern of destruction, displacement, and colonialism. We need to learn, and that's just a contract. That's just all that is a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. You don't have an ancestral right to our land. So if white farmers in South Africa and Zimbabwe are being put off their land, you never belong there in the first place. You should go. Or you should make some attempt to share in a righteous way, in a restorative way, the land that you stole with the people you stole it from.
So somebody would then say, okay, well, your ancestors aren't from here.
Nope.
What if Native American people said everybody that wasn't Native American had to go?
Yo, I'd be out.
I'd be gone.
I'd be out.
I'm trying to get gone anyway.
Me
but,
too.
That said, if a Native American comrade and people he's in community with came and said, looked me in my eye and said, yo, Crenshaw, we're waging a campaign to get our land back, and you're either with us or against us. You know what I would say? What can I do to be with you?
I'm with you.
And if they asked me, they said, we're going to give you some time to get yourself together and get you and your family out of here, I would have no choice but to figure out how to be in solidarity with that effort. Because I don't imagine that it's my right to act like history did not take from them what is rightfully theirs.
We got stolen land.
We own stolen land.
Facts.
And anything that we can do in our power, once we are aware of the facts, to support a rightful redistribution, then we need to be down with that, man.
Absolutely.
So, Malcolm, you are a writer. Obviously, you're a thinker. I feel like we share a lot of the same consciousness.
Yes, sir.
And when I listen to you, it makes me go, well, I need to know. The people need to know. So what, tell me about what you choose to write about in that discipline and why it's part of your world.
I'm a poet primarily. I study poetry under a wonderful lady. Her name is Linda Goss. I grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia's official storyteller, and she was my first writing teacher. Linda gave me a journal and was like, write, boy. And so I did, and I never stopped. That was in 1982. But also I studied under bell hooks at UC Santa Cruz and Sonia Sanchez in Philadelphia. So I've studied with some great writers. I am primarily a poet, an essayist. I had a book published 3 years ago. Now, 2015, it's called 144 Poems and Essays for God, Love, Truth, Justice, Peace, and Hip Hop. I just regained the rights to it. The publishing company, for whatever reason, went out of business, Smooth Stones Press. But I looked it up on Amazon, and it's selling for hundreds of dollars. So
wow.
Don't try to buy it off Amazon. If you hit me, I'll send you the ebook for free, malcolm@deepculture.net. And the print copy should be back in June,
okay.
And that'll be for $20 off my website.
I need to go dig up my copy.
Yeah,
get back on it. You know, it's an obligation,
right?
You know, it's an obligation. It's an obligation. Sometimes when you do, can you relate to the fact like being busy and actually struggling to find the time to do the things that you should have already did?
Man,
you know.
Yeah.
It's part of the struggle, right?
It took me 8 years to get that book out. I mean,
bro, I'm.
It took 8 years to like. From, okay, I'm gathering all my notes and journals and everything, and I have a book project that I'm 2 years in right now. I work very slowly, and I want my books to reflect the vision I have in my head. Like, the books that I am writing are not for profit. I want people to buy them and get them, but I'm mostly doing it to realize the dream I have in my head of being an author and getting my thoughts out to the people. For conversation and for dialogue, like that's what I love when people read and then they want to hit you and talk about the stuff that they wrote and that they want to share with you their writing. Like that's the exciting thing for me, like about writing is the the activation of dialogue and like sharing thoughts and emotions and creative expression. I love it. Like, that's what makes me happy and gives me, like, brings me closer to my creative, my purpose, which is to create.
Right, right. Yeah, we're spiritual people, you know, and you said being close to my creative purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard you saying that, I also simultaneously heard in my own inner voice, I heard being close to my creator, you
yes.
know, like the act of creating in your most authentic self, creating in that state is actually producing something of value to other human beings. And it's pulling out of you the highest thing that you can actually contribute to life.
Absolutely.
You know, and so to me, it's an obligation. You know, we went and we saw the brother speak, Don L. Lee,
Hakimata Booty.
Hakimata Booty, man. Yeah. And he said, artists are the freest people. And I wish I had time to really sit with that brother and talk more about that statement, because sometimes being an artist does not feel like a free existence.
Not 'cause we'd be broke.
and if you create conscious art, you are struggling, bro.
Yeah, man.
I think that what I thought about when I reflected on that is, just because freedom is dear to your heart and drives your purpose and your process, does not mean that things are easy.
Nah.
See, we need to let go of the concept that freedom is not struggle.
No, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And also, what you think is freedom. I mean, so for me, you know, freedom has taken different forms.
Right.
When I was a child, being free was like, oh, I'm at my mom and dad's house. I could do whatever I want.
Right.
But they were still putting money in my bank, right?
Right.
And then when I started working, I was like, yo, I broke 50 racks. I was like, yo, I'm free now. I got 50 a year.
Yeah.
And then I found out 50 wasn't really no money according to my lifestyle.
Right.
Right. And so then when I got my first good government job and I had access and I could walk in and out the police station at will, I was like, I'm free.
Yeah.
I'm in the jail and I'm walking out, you know. You know what I'm saying? Honestly, yo, I used to work for the court. I used to work for Superior Court in Alameda County.
Yeah.
And I had to go into the jail every day. And like being there, and I had been in that jail, you know,
man,
for like tickets and stuff. So and other things. So being able to go in and just like just check and show my little badge, and I had
right.
dreadlocks and stuff. I was like, yo, I'm free. Now I understand that freedom is a different thing. Freedom is being able to say what I want without real repercussions. I'm not going to lose my job because I was talking crazy. Nobody ain't going to do nothing to me.
Right.
You know? And now that we done lost a young King Nipsey,
man.
Right? But you see how his energy continued and amplified, how he done jumped up and spread out. Same thing Pac did. So
yeah.
This is the first rapper. Now we talking B-boy to B-boy. For me,
yeah.
Nipsey,
uh-huh.
God bless the dead.
Yeah.
Pac, God bless the dead.
Right.
This is the first person we lost since Pac.
Yeah.
Who came with that that Pac
and see,
energy that Pac
and
was
see, the thing
with.
Is, though, he not only drew off of Pac's energy, but he actually went a couple steps beyond.
He did,
and that's
bro.
That's what should happen. That's what should happen. But you know
the
what?
The young should evolve.
Hey, this is killing me. We got to go. I'm going to have you back. Our time is up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good, thanks.
Malcolm Shabazz Hoover, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for listening to News from the Boo. Stay tuned for The Yam. It's going to be Malcolm, a show with other comrades on KBOO. And one love. Peace.
Peace.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the world premiere of Jump, co-produced by Confrontation Theater and the Milagro Theater. The play runs from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Jump is the story of a 20-something who is reeling from the death of her mother. She is looking for solace in a good place to vape, but what she finds is a journey of self-discovery. Again, that's Jump, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from March 21st through April 13th at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot in Portland. Challenging the Both Sides Narrative is a talk by Dr. Stanislav Vysotsky. This talk will provide an overview of contemporary fascist and anti-fascist movements with a focus on the key differences between them. Again, that's Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. ¶¶